What's up, everyone? Hope this message finds you well. I'm super excited to drop this episode with Ali Mirza, whose background is literally electric. That's right. He studied electrical engineering, and then he went on to pursue his MBA in marketing. And today, he serves as a growth marketer. He's an entrepreneur that came out of the corporate world to start his own business. He also serves as an advisor to different businesses and business owners to help them with different social media strategies and their lead generation strategies. So I hope you guys enjoy it. Let me know what you think. Cheers.
This is the Tomas Show, your source for personal and professional development.
Welcome to another episode of The Tomas Show. I'm super thrilled today to have my dear friend Ali Mirza. Mirza, is that correct pronunciation?
That is correct.
Mirza, I haven't even asked you how to pronounce it and I knew it.
You have not. And actually, a lot of people have. Ali is short and simple.
For sure, yeah.
It's the most common. It's actually the second most common name in the world. The first one is Muhammad.
That's right.
But yeah, a lot of people chip on Mirza, but you got it.
I'm surprised I'm not seeing you somewhere on a video here, or I don't know, there's no YouTube presentation or maybe a course being played simultaneously as we record this. So I'm just very grateful for your time, man. I've been a fan and a follower, obviously. You provide a lot of great educational contents, not only online but in person. I think you have a tremendous story. We share the bond of an immigrant, and yeah. I feel like we need to put you out there in the airways, man, even more, man. So yeah.
I always say, Tomas, it's like we all have unique story.
Yeah.
The way we are brought up, the way we do our education, the way we do our, work or businesses like we do today. It's just a matter of the more, but somehow, people get tripped on like not being able to share their story, or they feel like their story is not important. But I from what I've seen and I'm seeing, and importance of storytelling, right? The more you share your story, the more you connect with people. And here's the cool thing, the more you inspire people without even knowing. Because you don't know who's watching you. You don't know who's like 10 steps behind you. And you being able to share your story is inspiring that person.
No, I agree with you completely. To be honest, it's been a process for myself too. I think we all have a story, but you never really think that way consciously, especially when you're young and when you're like, you're growing up, you're maturing, you go through life, you have a good time or whatever. And then, somebody tells you, or you realize perhaps that your story could be beneficial for the benefit of others.
Yeah.
And I think that's what you're doing. Obviously I'm trying to be somewhat a reflection and replicator and help others as well. I think we share that in common as well. So I'm just pumped, man. I'm pumped to sit down with you today here. I know you're a busy dude and have classes on classes and clients and consulting sessions. So I'm just pumped to be like squeezed into this calendar, man.
Let's do it. Let's provide lots of value to people listening and watching too. Yeah.
For sure. So I want to know, obviously we said your background as an immigrant. How did you get to the States to begin with? And, how did your story started here? I think that's something that we need to highlight the most, probably.
Yeah. So I had no plans and no intentions of, leaving Pakistan.
Yeah.
That's where, that's where I was born. That's where I'm from. But, it was a trend, sort of, everyone, if you're doing good in school or in university, we call it in Pakistan, the next step is supposed to be go to either United States or UK or Canada or Australia, right? So a friend of mine brought it up. He's like, why not go to United States and, let's just explore. And we decided, I think in a matter of 6 months, we decided that, we want to go. And then we were here. So we transferred. I was in my 4-year college in Pakistan, and we transferred and we lost some credits too. But that's how kind of like my story started. And the crazy part is I came to this country 9 days before 9/11.
Oh, wow.
And 9/11 is my date of birth.
That is crazy. Wow.
And my first name is Muhammad.
Yeah.
And my passport is from Pakistan.
So on that note, I'm just curious, when all that happened and the 9/11, obviously your birthday, we all been somewhere, right, during the time. So I want to ask you two questions. Where were you on 9/11 on your birthday? And how long did it take you, given all that has taken place, to go back to Pakistan and perhaps visit your family?
So I was actually attending classes. I was going from my, I believe, chemistry class to English class. And I saw, you know, TV and everyone crying. And that's how kind of, you know, I came to know about the incident. And it did, you know, take me a long time. Because if you remember, after 2001, 9/11, the economy went best. Mm-hmm. There were no jobs. You know, after we graduated, I was actually the only person in our class who got the job. And that's just a totally different story. But it took me, I came here in 2001. It took me 7 years to go back home.
Wow.
Because I was stuck in that loop. Hey, I'm here. Things are so bad. If I leave, I may not be able to
return. Yeah.
So let's just to make the most of my opportunity. So I finished my master's. I, you know, worked at GE and then Sprint and Microsoft, those companies. But yeah, I got stuck in those, you know, those processes that you follow once you go from, you know, F1 visa, student visa to, you know, H1 visa.
For sure, for sure. And you, what you may not know is, so I know your bachelor's was from UMKC.
Yes.
University of Missouri, Kansas City. So I actually, for my early days in the States, 2006, I think I was receiving some letters from UMKC, ironically.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, like to play ball. So you know, I thought that was just a humbling experience in itself. And I thought it was ironic because I forgot totally where you got your undergrad. And I think what we need to highlight here is you've studied electrical engineering.
Yes.
Like what you're doing today is just something completely different on another level. But I think the reason why you're so successful and the reason why you have such bandwidth to provide value and teach and educate and consult. And you're a, you know, you're a marketer, you're you know, a startup advisor, growth marketer, and you help a lot of businesses with their social media aspects of things and beyond that. But I think this is just my assessment, my genuine assessment, that that engineering degree has given you probably the foundation, because you are very, very unique. Yes. And there's not many people that do that, what you do with an engineering background.
Yeah. And, you know, not to brag, but I'll, you know, just quick story. Being an engineer, you have different way of thinking. You know, people call it, you know, analytical.
For sure. Yeah.
So that's how I think. And I think today when I sit with potential clients, that becomes my competitive advantage. Because I don't just say, hey, let's go create a cool Facebook ad campaign.
Yeah, yeah.
Or let's just launch something cool on Instagram. I say, hey, let's look at your data, your Google Analytics, and see what your users or customers are already liking.
Yeah.
And let's do more based on what the data tells us.
For sure.
So it ends up, yeah, I have a, you know, crazy background as far as being, you know, I had an electrical engineering degree, but guess what? There were no jobs. There was one job at GE for a software developer, and I got that job.
Tell that story. This is just crazy. I think you shared that with me before, because I just totally had a glimpse of that when you shared it with me. So how did you get that? Because that's pretty interesting.
So during my last semester at UMKC, you know, things were really bad. We were applying for jobs, but there were no responses, no interviews, right? So I found out the local GE's office in Kansas City, they had an internship. So I applied, I got the internship, and it was just basic, you know, I was just doing the documentation and, you know, documenting their processes. So towards the end of that internship, my degree was also coming to an end. Mm-hmm. And I found out that one of the software developer, the guy was retiring. So he was 65 plus, but he was retiring. So I just walked right into the hiring manager's office and I told him, hey, I found out that you know, there's a job opening in software, you know, engineering or software development. I want to apply. And he looked at me and he said, yeah, sure, just apply. And when you're done, let me know. And, you know, I was scheduled for an interview, and somehow I convinced them I can do software development.
Wow.
So that's the big thing. And I believe the lesson here is I did know the basics, right? Mm-hmm. So when you do your electrical engineering, that you do take couple of classes, but it's far different from if you are going to school for software engineering. It's very, very different. But I just saw an opportunity and I was like, I'm just going to try it and let's see what happens.
Yeah, I think that's a perfect example of something that you basically created, you know, for yourself. And all you did was just try and attempt, which I admire you for. Being not a software developer, you purely created something out of nothing and then probably took a lot of effort to educate yourself and kind of being a self-taught programmer.
Yeah, I remember the first 6 months on the job, it was just crazy. Because imagine a 21-year-old fresh college graduate replacing a 65-year-old, someone who has experience of, 40 years, 50 years, right? And I used to go back and read his code and his comments. That's how I learned. And I used to make changes to break something and see what the impact is. That was the first 6 months was me doing, just crazy things, just breaking his code, trying to learn different how he wrote, why he put an if loop here or a while loop here instead of like any other statement. So it was, on the job learning for sure.
So you will appreciate this. When I was in college, I studied marketing, and for whatever reason, I felt like I should study, I should pursue a second major, and I considered programming. And it's all, and I'm like, I'm a basketball player, business degree, and now I program. But then when I realized how many hours I have to be in a lab,
yeah,
which my schedule was definitely not allowing me to do that, then I was like, let's scratch that and let's just take a basic like an EMIS course, which is, obviously technology,
yeah,
IT course. And then I had another idea, but obviously that didn't work out. It's so hard, man. It's programming, I think, engineering. I mean, those are just some of the technical proficiencies and crafts today that are at demand.
Yes.
So I'm surprised a little bit that you made a spin. And yes, I want you to talk about that spin, because GE is an amazing organization, obviously, but you made that spin,
yes,
over time to who you are today. So how did that take place?
So I did, over time, I got really good at the job I was doing. And, GE has this, I believe it's called FOL, Foundation of Leadership. So I was identified as top 20 percentile in the whole GE. That's like all over the world. And then we flew to, they had a corporate office in Erie, Pennsylvania. So we had a training, session there. So over time, I got really good. Then I quit GE and then went to Sprint, did the same thing. And then I got a job opportunity here in Dallas. It's with a company called Lennox. So they make heating and cooling, mm-hmm, systems. They're your, the thermostats that you see it on your wall. That's what we made. In that job, I realized that, hey, having a cool product or service is not enough. Because we would launch a new, let's say, a thermostat, and there's no demand.
Yeah, yeah.
People are not buying it. So I kind of started learning or paying attention that to the fact that having a cool product or service is not enough. What you got to do is address the need and the demand of your customer. So that was the beginning of me, getting interested in marketing. And I was like, okay, so there's something else. What I do is really good. It's awesome and I'm really good at it, but there's a piece that's missing, because I can think of different features, what needs to be in a thermostat. I can write code or I can work with other system engineers and make it happen. But when we go put this in the hands of our users or our consumers, they're confused. So we're speaking one language and they're speaking another language. So how do we bridge that gap together, together? So that's where I started looking into, product marketing as a, mm-hmm, as an option for me to, to do something. But another thing I did, Tomas, I also looked at what my boss was doing. Cause I was like, I think that was the time when I started looking at, my life and my job as a whole. And I was like, I don't want to be like my boss in 10 years. He's awesome. Mm-hmm. I really appreciate everything that he does, but I don't want that lifestyle. And that was the trigger point in my mind that, okay, there's something else, that maybe there's another path. I didn't know that I wanted to start my own business. Mm-hmm. I didn't know I wanted to have my own marketing agency,
but
that was the trigger point that, hey, if you stay on this path, you're going to be like your boss in 10 years. And I did not want that. So once I realized that, hey, marketing is something I'm interested in, and I also know that this is not the path I want to follow, so I took different steps to make the change.
But it's pretty, like I was saying in the beginning, it's very rare, not only to study something, you know, you become an engineer, then self-taught programmer, and then, I mean, those crafts are very well compensated to my knowledge. There, people hire a lot of folks with that background.
Yes.
You need to have an internal capacity to realize, okay, you know what? I feel like this is what's going on in the market. Let me evolve into something else that I never thought I would be.
Yes.
So not only it's presence of mind, I feel like, but also just, you know, you thinking big picture, perhaps.
Yeah.
And not just being comfortable like, okay, you know, I'm going to be this engineer, which is amazing. It's something that is way over my head. But now you are evolving into this marketer. And not many people that I know make such a, I don't want to say dramatic spin, but mm-hmm. it's pretty special to transition from one field to another. So
yes.
Well, as you did transition, what was your biggest takeaway? Like as you compared the two fields and what helped you as a product marketer that you really deployed from the engineering background?
Yeah. You know, funny that you know, kind of hearing your thoughts or comments, but when I was going through that change, it didn't feel like dramatic. For me, it felt like I'm going like really slow. But now looking back, yeah, I'd say it's a transition. You know, a couple of things. Once I realized, I think that's where a lot of people get stuck. They know they don't like this job. They know they don't like this relationship. They know they don't like their current situation, but they don't do anything to explore the new path, right? So once I, you know, realized another crazy thing I did, and I don't know how I did it, but once I realized I want to explore, maybe I have some interest in marketing, because that's what I knew at the time. I approached my boss, just like, you know, I did back in the GE days. I told him, hey, I want to work in marketing. And I applied 2 years in a row in different marketing positions. I didn't get it. I got rejected. So then I started applying outside the company. And it's crazy. Imagine someone who has a resume of being an engineer and being a really good background. Mm-hmm. And now that person is applying for a marketing role at your company. So I applied to about 70 jobs, had 10 interviews, and then I got one offer.
Wow.
I took it, and I also took about 30 to 40% pay cut. But here, the reason I want to share this is I was so clear on where I wanted to go. Hey, if I stay in this job, I'm good. I'm making money. I'm really, you know, I'm highly paid. Engineers are, you know, high six figures, you know, after some time. But my lifestyle, I felt like there's something more. I felt like I can contribute more to the society. I felt like I could create more.
Yeah.
And in 9-to-5 job, I felt like I was in a box. So once I realized I did everything, so I started applying to the marketing jobs. Eventually I got one. And then once I got that job and also the pay cut, I also started doing, you know, what we call side hustling.
Yes.
So nights and weekends, I was just trying to, you know, I was going to different meetups, just connecting with people and trying to see if I can secure some clients. And then once I had two or three clients, that's when I started thinking about quitting my job and starting a business. So the reason I wanted to share this story is there are steps involved.
Mm-hmm.
It's not I went from this to this in overnight. There was a thinking, and the next step first, you know, imagine if my boss or the job that I applied in the product marketing department, if I had gotten that job, maybe I would just stay there for another 10 years and I wouldn't be on this path. So, you know, the lesson that I learned for myself, and I always tell the people that I coach or mentor, you know, it's really hard to know what you want in future. It's really hard to predict the future. But one thing we always know is our current situation. Do you like it or not? You know, and I always say, if you like it, then continue. But if you don't, take a small step. And in a practical, let's say an example, let's say if you want to start a dropshipping business, right?
Mm-hmm.
Go to meetup.com, find dropshipping meetups, and just go sit with those people once a week. Right? So that's, I believe, for me, that was the huge factor. Identifying that I want to change, and then taking small steps over time to make it happen.
how and I think that's pretty special here, and I appreciate you sharing the level of insight that you provided just now, because it was very much in depth. How were, so that, let's say there are the resources in place, all the meetups that we may think about, but what if there is a person that is doing their job and they don't even know where to start? They know that this is not for them, but perhaps, you know, they don't really know what type of meetup to attend. It's just, they're just so confused, and perhaps, and I know a lot of people are like that. Yeah. You know, perhaps it's just their current situation, or maybe situation at home, personally, professionally, whatever happens that impacts them and their capacity to really kind of like look around them,
yeah,
and explore their hobbies, their passions. And I think you did that. Yes. But what could we say to those that are not making those steps? How can we encourage them to do that?
Yeah. And actually, I think what you said last in the last sentence, explore your hobbies,
yeah,
and explore your interests. I think that's the key. And here's the, you know, thing. What I would do is look at the last like 1 month of your life. And where have you spent most of your non-working time? Are you reading any specific books, specific type of books, or are you consuming specific type of podcasts or blog articles?
Yeah.
That may be the place where you want to look into. Because, you know, it's funny, you know, when we work and we get paid.
Correct.
You know, in most cases, if, you know, if companies stop paying us, people will stop doing the work, right? But there are things that we actually don't care about the money. You know, some people are so much into, you know, content creation. They create videos and no one is actually paying them.
Mm-hmm.
Some people are like in podcasting. Some people just love, you know, reading self-development books. So just look at the last 1 month of your life and then try to identify where have you spent most of your time when you were not working. What are different hobbies, activities that you're doing, and your next big idea or your business idea might be in there.
Yeah, that's so simple.
Yes.
So simple, yet so powerful. But I think it takes, you know, takes time to reflect, I think. And most importantly, it takes, you know, a person to provide it feedback to someone that is in a place, mm-hmm, perhaps of confusion or a little bit of a, you know, crossroads where they're like, oh, I don't know what to do next. You know, so that's awesome, man.
And, you know, another thing I would mention, and obviously, you know, I've explored a lot of things. You know, today I run a marketing agency,
yeah,
educational online, you know, courses. I've created my own startups that failed. I've launched e-commerce businesses that failed. Looking back, I can clearly tell the things that I started by looking at other people, by getting inspired. Hey, someone is making really good money doing e-commerce. Let's do it. I failed. Everything that I started by looking at other people, I failed. And the things that I started just from inside by exploring my own interests, that those are the things that thrived.
Interesting. You know, I want to highlight something. I appreciate you sharing that. I want to highlight your business, obviously, because I feel like this has you have a very, very interesting corporate kind of, you know, journey that you've been on and worked for different companies. We talked about your spin-off from engineering to marketing, you know, and digital marketing and whatnot. And you also had a social media role at another organization here locally. But, you know, what caused you to say, you know what, I'm just gonna launch my own business? And what did you just come to a place where you had enough of these side hustle clients that was basically took over your income and you were able to justify certain things? Like, what was your merit behind it?
Mainly that. And, you know, remember, my first sort of trigger point was, I don't want to be in this engineering job. Seems like I have interest in marketing. So let's go explore that. So my, mm-hmm, next step was applying for jobs and, you know, getting one finally. It was at a marketing agency, and a really small marketing agency. And that's where I realized that it's actually fun. You know, thinking about when you're doing marketing, you're really, you know, it's funny. I always say, you know, marketing is, there's a quote in marketing books. Marketing is so important that you cannot leave it to the marketing department.
True.
Like, everyone in your company is a marketer, right?
I agree.
I kind of really enjoy that. Hey, this person has this business. This is their target audience. So kind of like, you know, as a being a detective and trying to understand their business, before I created like marketing campaigns. So while working at that marketing job, I kind of really liked it. And I was like, I'm on the right path. And it's another funny thing, you know, funny story. We used to do a lot of influencer campaigns or mommy blogger campaign. Mm-hmm. This is where we actually worked with Chevy. So Chevy would want to do a mommy blogger campaign and we would actually manage it. So we would have, 15 or 20 mom bloggers all over the country writing about Chevy's products. So I was the project manager for that campaign. So I remember one time I was talking to this mom blogger, and I forgot where she was at, maybe Vermont or one of those like really cool places. And we were doing a Skype call and I was in the, obviously it was my marketing job. I was in the office and I could see that she was on the beach. And she had her laptop and I was like, I was just curious, what are you doing? What do you do? And then she told me that, okay, she has a blog, she writes about different products and affiliate marketing. And then she also has social media at the time agency. And that's when I was like, that seems really cool. And I was like, okay, what hours do you work? Who do you work with? And, she was the person who kind of piqued my interest. And that was another trigger point for me. And then that's where I started thinking about, hey, I'm going to launch something and I'm going to do it on my own terms. So everything that I don't enjoy, being at the marketing agency, the big processes and less creativity and, going back and forth with clients, I'm going to eliminate all of that. So that's where I kind of more actively started reaching out to clients and, doing my side hustle hours.
For sure.
And once I got to a point where I was like, hey, seems like I'm on to something. I remember my first goal was to replace my income from the job. And once I got to that point, I was like, okay, now it's time to leave.
And then you just scaled from there.
Then I scaled from there. Yes.
And it's the rest is history. I mean, you've been doing this, 6 years almost now?
Yes, almost. Yeah? Yes.
Yeah. That's crazy, man. I, in a good meaning of that word, because I feel like, I go and talk to students a lot, try to help them out and mentor, and everybody's, watching the Gary V's of the world and others and entrepreneurs that are successful or entrepreneurs that call themselves that and they're perhaps trying to be. So I think this journey of freedom or entrepreneurship and like working from the beach, it's something that is very attractive to especially young people these days because, that's all they see on Instagram and social media. And it's like, okay, how do I create that version of life for myself on my own terms? And I think that's what you did, man.
Yeah. And one thing I would mention, me doing my, business, launching a couple of startups, there was no beach. There is still no beach, absolutely, right? We're sitting in Dallas. Yeah, yeah. But what I really, enjoyed or explored or discovered about myself is the being creative part. When I launch a businesses come to me and they're like, we're launching this book, we're launching this product. What do you think is the best way to market this, right? To me, that's a creative problem.
For sure.
I feel like even when I created my mobile app a couple of years ago, it's funny. It's a different feeling once you create something and then you put it into the hands of people, whether it's an app or a website or a product or maybe a marketing campaign or maybe just a video. It's just a different feeling. You feel like you've created something and you added value, which is really hard to feel when you're in 9 to 5. So that was the internal feeling that kept me going. And I, still love what I do. I love, creating problems or solving problems, creating solutions. And when people obviously give me feedback, that just pushes me forward.
Yeah, that's awesome.
That's my drug.
What's your, what would be one of the favorite experiences or engagements that you had in the past 6 years that you really felt like, okay, I have something to solve. I have this problem and I'm going to go all after it, all hands on deck, super pumped and excited. I made the right decision to basically, go on my own.
Yeah. So it was actually, the thing that I'm most proud of, it's actually a failure. It's a long story, but we'll make it quick. Mm-hmm. So we obviously, at iSocially, that's my company.
Yes,
we work with different businesses and, we help them generate leads from social media. We help them create different strategies. So we worked with a wedding venue and they came to us. They had a huge budget. They wanted to do the lead generation campaign. was good money. So I signed up the clients and I was like, okay, here's the, we're going to create, you know, this campaign. We launched the campaign, it failed. So our estimate, our goal was to generate leads for less than $2. Our cost of lead was like over $10.
Oh, wow.
So huge failure, but we did get paid in the beginning. Yeah. So to me, the biggest lesson there was, hey, in the beginning, the reason I accepted this client was because I was going to make more money.
Mm-hmm.
I did not look under the hood to see if it's the right fit for this business.
I see.
If this strategy is the right strategy for this business. And that was a huge sort of like a lesson that I learned, which even helps me today. Today, when people come to me and they're like, hey, Ali, we want to hire you for Facebook ads. The first thing I do is that even the right solution
for your business? Business?
Yeah, exactly. And had I not had that failure, I would not have learned that lesson. So that was a, you know, sort of huge, you know, something, even though we failed, but I was upfront with that client and we told them, this is the mistake we made. And to be honest, so we did everything. It's funny that the tactics that we used, we had used with other clients and they were successful. When we, you know, so here's another lesson. The things that work for one business does not work for another business.
For sure.
You know, if you're looking at, you know, Gary Vee or other people or, you know, anyone online, and, you know, actually, you know, do you remember, I'm talking to people watching now, when we look at online and there are people talking about, hey, I did a Facebook ad campaign and made $1 million, and you do the same thing and nothing happens.
Yeah, your results will be different.
Right. Obviously. Why? Because your context is different. Your situation is different. The brand loyalty people have with your brand is different. So to me, it's not, don't just follow the expert, do follow the way they think. So you understand the way they're designing their campaign, but don't just, you know, blindly follow their campaigns or their tactics, right?
How if you had to think of a ratio where you get approached from a context perspective, like prospects, potential clients know their context, know their situations, versus they see an influencer and everybody talks about, you know, Google AdWords or Facebook, Instagram marketing, and hey, Ali, we need help with this.
Yes.
How much do you get both? Like, what would you, it's a 50-50 or?
No, it's actually most of the clients are, they, you know, real example is recently a doctor's office came to us and they're like, hey, we want to do Instagram influencer campaign.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's cool. You know, you have a really good traffic on your website. You're not doing much with the, you know, Facebook or Facebook ads.
For sure.
If you just created the Facebook ads to retarget traffic,
yeah,
you're going to, because their goal, yes, that's cool that you want to do Instagram influencer campaign because you want to build your Instagram audience because you read a blog and the owner of the brand was really social savvy. So he was really into, he knew everything. He knew all the new changes Instagram has made, the stories and everything. But once I sat with him, I was like, your goal is actually to drive more patients to the clinic. And one of the, yeah, we can go build Instagram channel, but one of the easy way or low hanging fruit is retarget all the traffic that's going to your website from, because they were running Google ads and they were doing SEO. Retarget all of those people with Facebook ads. So once I explained to him, it made total sense. But initially he had come to me with a shiny object. That's what I call it, right?
Yeah.
So people usually, you know, they look at a shiny object and they think like this is the answer to their, all of their business problems. But, you know, good thing, all the successes and failures, and what I've learned is what you gotta, you know, you gotta step back and really ask the why. Like, why do you want to do this for your business or for your marketing? And then create a strategy. If you're creating a strategy just because you watched a really cool video that has 1.2 million views and, you know, 30,000 shares, and you want to do the same thing, it may not work for you.
For sure. I think you provide a very, you just provided a very comprehensive summary, which obviously that something that you have experienced with the doctor, and you know, it's I sometimes think the same way. You know, we're all human. We look at different things, and our human nature is such as we compare ourselves, or we look like, oh, we should do this, we should do that, but then, to your point, the messaging is different, premise, objective is different. So I feel like I guess what I should say here, you should just come and speak to Ali so he can he can give you the comprehensive blend of engineering and marketing analytical perspective of what you should be doing.
Yeah. And you know, it's awesome, man. It's all the journey, the successes and the failure. And we're still learning.
Yeah.
I mean, there are things that we make mistakes. It's, you know, like I said before, but if you're gonna follow someone, it's going to be really hard to be successful at that thing just because mm-hmm. you think you have passion for e-commerce business because you watched someone a YouTube video and someone is showing their bank account, their Stripe accounts with millions of dollars, and they're saying they on a fidget spinner they made a lot of money, and now you want to do the same thing. It's really, really tough, and it's actually I'm it's coming from experience because I've done those mistakes.
It happened over and over again. So you just now, to you, it's a breeze. It's like, yeah, I've been there. What is this doctor doing?
Yeah.
Like, seriously. Yeah. How many people, I'm just curious. So having your own business, do you have an LLC or are you just 1099? How does that work? Can you share?
So yes, absolutely. LLC.
LLC, okay.
And it's me and a team of six.
So your team
of
six.
All contractors. And the way we set up is, and I, one of the things that, and I always, you know, you've probably seen it, I love testing.
Yeah,
I love asking for feedback and then, you know, positioning your business in a way that it helps people. One of the things that I identified recently, actually, people don't really need help with social media marketing. I mean, they can create posts. They can post stuff on Instagram. They can create posts, right? What they really need is, you know, kind of someone who can think like one step higher or someone who can, is this the right thing to do for our business? If X is our budget, how much should we put on Facebook ads versus email marketing versus content marketing versus, you know, any new stuff?
Mm-hmm.
So what I've been kind of positioning our iSocial U is we're the fractional CMO for your business.
I see.
So if you have a business and let's say you don't have a marketing department or a CMO, we'll come in, we'll look at your business and identify, you know, what your goals are, who your target audience is, and what's the best way to reach that audience with the budget that you have.
I see. So perhaps if somebody has a little limited resources or no resources at all, you can come and kind of supply that. No, that's fantastic, man. I know I want to be respectful of your time. I keep listening to you and I look at your shirt. And it just, you know, I love, if you don't follow Ali on Instagram, you have to. And when I drop this episode, I'll make sure I provide all the links and everything. But I love your little, when you post stuff, I love your little graphs and your, and I think that's where your creative analytical mind comes to place and it just gives you a visual picture. So you have fear in a circle and then success outside of the circle of fear. Why are you wearing it? I think I already know why, but I just want you to articulate it because I don't see many people even wearing shirts like this or having an idea to put a display for the benefit of others.
So it's my own blog. It's called letsgraph.com.
Yeah.
And, you know, the funny story behind that is, you know, back, let's, you know, kind of rewind. Back when I was in my, you know, job at Lennox and I was thinking of leaving, and at the same time I was also exploring my passion for marketing, I discovered blogging. So I discovered people are doing this thing called blogging and somehow they're monetizing it and making a living. And I was like, I want to blog. But then I was like, hey, my English is really bad. My grammar is really bad. What can I do? So I ended up settling or doing this. So my blog is letsgraph.com. And I basically turn different when I'm consuming content, reading books or blogs. As I learn things for myself, this is my way of, you know, communicating to my audience. Super simple, on point. And there are actually only two people in the world who do this. There's another person who has a similar blog, and then there's me.
And it's Let's Graph, like Let's GRAPH.
Yes.
That's a, when did you steal the domain? I'm curious.
Really old. I think back probably 2013. So 13. I've been doing it for a while.
Yeah, no, I've seen it, man. It's pretty cool stuff.
Graphs have been featured on 9gag,
huge
company. Also, Brian Tracy's marketing team have used my graphs.
Really?
And some other really like personal development. Some of these have like really good messages, right?
So they just reach out to you based on what you post?
No,
they just DM you or
they just steal it.
They just steal it?
Yeah.
Do they even tag you or no?
So in some cases, yeah, they tag me or they tag the account. In some cases, because I've been doing it for a while, so a lot of people know that it's when they see something like this,
yeah.
they think of me. This has become my
brand. No, for sure. No, it's your brand. It's like part of your brand. Yeah.
Just like tag me and they'd be like, oh, someone so-and-so is using your brand.
They recognize you for it. So you have so many dimensions that and value that you can provide for the benefit of others. It's almost difficult to comprehend because it's a lot. And so you have different logs in the fire, obviously, or different fires. Mm-hmm. So one question kind of from a time management organizational perspective, because I think that's very important. How do you stay on top of everything on task to manage your business, to blog, to have content that is produced and deployed for the benefit of others? Because it's a lot of I've been following you and you produce great things, but there's a time commitment there. So
how do you do it?
What strategy do you have in place?
You know, I actually have a really simple sort of strategy. I do what's easy for me, to be honest with you. And actually, you know, you might have seen it. I do a lot of videos, but they're all videos like this.
Yeah.
Because that's the only time I have.
I got you.
The reason I did this, you know, it became really cool that a lot of people, it's my brand now. But if you go back and think, I did it because I couldn't write. This is the only thing I could do. If I wanted to communicate my ideas with people, this is the only thing I could do. So honestly, my clients, my classes, even the content I produce, and actually there's some other things that I do too online, they are all tied into my life. I always say, like, if you try to balance things, so if let's say if this is your work and this is your hobby, you're gonna have a really hard time balancing those. Mm-hmm. But if it's all the same, it's gonna become like a really, it's gonna integrate and it's gonna become like easy to manage. I'll give you like one example. I create a lot of courses. I have on a platform called Udemy, a lot of people may know, I have over 36 courses, 80,000 students and more actually now.
Wow. Udemy.com, by the way, Udemy.com.
Uh-huh. So what happens is it may seem like here I have clients, I manage them, here I have courses, but they all feed into each other. And I'll tell you how. When I was creating my courses, I was just sharing the stuff I was doing with the client. So if I had a client and we were launching like a lead generation campaign, mm-hmm. I would document the whole process and that's a class.
Wow.
So it was feeding into each other. And now guess what happens? There are so many people, they'll go take they'll spend the money, they'll take the course and they'll realize, hey, this is actually really difficult.
Yeah.
But just because they took the course from me, now they also trust me as an authority or as a person that they can rely on. So they spend money, they buy my course, they consume it, they realize that it's not something easy they can do it on their own because they're a business owner, they're not marketers.
For sure.
And they come back to me.
For more.
For more.
Wow. That's such an amazing,
it feeds into
everything is so integrated and correlated all together.
Yeah.
It's 36 courses, 86,000 students.
Yes.
So with that multiple, it sounds like multiple sources of income. I mean, you're just like on another level, man. Like the guy that is just under the radar here and not the co-working, like, oh yeah, I'm just hanging out, you know, doing my thing. I know you have to run, man. I really can't thank you enough for sitting down with me here today. I want to ask you one last question. Mm-hmm. With all that you have experienced, and I always ask people that because I think it's a powerful question and there are different responses, but what do you think would be one piece of advice that you could provide, for all the students that you teach for the benefit of younger generation?
You know, what comes to mind, you know, there's we always hear about, have big goals, right? I do, yeah, we got to think big, we got to have big goals. But I believe the progress comes from the baby step.
Yes.
So, you know, you can think of big goals, but if you're not taking small steps to get there, you'll get discouraged. You won't continue, you won't build momentum, and you'll not get even closer to your goal. So one thing I always say, do be dream big dreams, do have big goals, but then kind of forget about them and then focus on the process. You know, maybe you're, if you're in the, to kind of make it, to give you an example, maybe your goal is to have six packs, right?
Yeah.
Have that goal, but then forget about that and create the process of going to the gym every single day. Create the process of eating the right food, create the process of, you know, sleeping 8 hours or, you know, whatever many hours. So big goals are cool. We need them because they inspire us. But then make sure you're taking small baby steps, because when we take small steps, that creates progress. Progress creates momentum. And that's how we just keep on going and going and going.
Ali Mirza, ladies and gentlemen, is dropping the mic on that note. I'm so thankful for, you know, this time that we spent together, man. I look forward, you know, to really years of friendship to come and working together. And you're a friend, fellow immigrant. And, you know, I think you not only make fellow marketers, your students, but I think you should be proud of, and I know you are, of your roots. And Pakistan would, I'm sure, is proud of who you are, man, and what value you provide for the benefit of others.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for the, you know, kind words and for having me. And, you know, I do want to acknowledge you. I think I've seen, I'm a startup advisor and mentor in Dallas.
Yeah.
There's so many people, they want to do things. They want to start a blog. They want to launch a podcast. They want to launch a video series. And I tell them, I show them or share the simple steps. But the way you're creating context is that when the first time we met, this podcast was an idea.
It was an idea, yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
And now you made it happen.
Yeah.
So I do want to acknowledge, I think I watch you from distance on LinkedIn consumer content. So perfect example of, you don't need to be an influencer. You don't need to have a big brand to create content. You don't need to have a business to create content. Whatever you're doing, if you're in 9 to 5, there are things that you like, you have opinions, you have, you know, different expertise, share those in form of content, because those are the stories that people want to know. And by those stories, you just create more opportunities. So I want to acknowledge you for everything that you're doing.
No, I appreciate it, man. Just trying to be a student, diligent student of everybody's craft, including yourself. So again, thanks so much, man. You know, and looking forward to seeing you again soon.
Awesome. Thanks for listening and watching, people.
Cheers.
Thank you for listening to The Tomas Show. Please subscribe and share.
What's up, podcast? Hope you guys enjoyed this episode with Ali Mirza. Please, please send me a message. Your feedback will mean the world. And if you have a second, I would appreciate very much if you went on iTunes, on your Apple Podcasts application on your phone, and left me a review as well. Looking forward to catching up with you in the next episode. Cheers.